Does my limpet look big in this?
Sleeping Beauty, more like a dozing.
Pirate hack attack as weapons go crackers.
Explorers rejoice as the Dysonator comes back online.
Fleet carriers spring a leak.
An urgent alert from Hackswing.
Several systems send pesky pirates packing.
You'd need a time turner to attend all of these events.
Not all limpets are equal. Some are more equal than others, or so the saying goes. With the launch of the latest multi-limpet controllers, as featured in previous weeks, the galaxy has been bogged down in a little bit of controversy over a rather weighty issue. Ships loading up with the latest in controller technology paired with their chosen daily activity out there in the black and loaded up with limpets were left quite literally unable to launch from the pad. The problem was massive. The new controllers and the accompanying limpets were far heavier than expected. The largest weighing in at over 160 tons, without limpets. Given that the space the controller occupied was little more than a briefcase in size, it did beg the question, what had happened for the controller to put on so much weight? Had it overindulged in mince pies? Was it skipping leg day at the gym, or even going overboard on the weights machine and protein shakes? Nothing so odd. Quite simply, there had been a mix-up of the periodic table kind and a lost decimal point that meant the chips weren't chips, they were boulders of doped semiconductors, gold connectors, and the casing was made out of lead. 4-inch-thick lead. It's suspected that too much partying over at the manufacturer's HQ, which we understand was under outbreak quarantine and where parties were banned, may have been at fault, with the manufacturing team approaching their computers the next morning with more than a little sore head. We approached Manticore for comment, and all they could say was,
"We'd like to make it very clear that there were no parties. It was a design meeting with wine and cheese. And pass the parcel and pin the tail on the mockaging beast, but definitely not a party. We would try and prove this, but it appears someone mistook the security camera for a coat rack, and the audio recording got all sticky when someone spilled the fondue on the microphone. However, it wasn't a party. Anyway, we've recalled the Olympic controllers, and they're now back to their proper weight, so there's nothing to see here."
We would believe them, but we've been sent photographs from the end of the meeting quiz, and at least two of the participants are sporting red noses and paper hats, which don't appear to conform to appropriate outbreak prevention regulations, or at least not when worn at a jaunty angle like that.
Back in September, we brought you this piece of news. We've got a contender for Commander Diluvian's crown, trying to be the person who manages to fly furthest out into the black and return, but this time without the fuel rats. Well, at least that's the plan. Commander Enchantment, not Enchantment, is planning to take a fleet of ships to Isham's Reach, then set off in the black to go as far as possible and then jump back. And they've been doing this in a Type 9, Lacon's long distance space cow. At the time, we promised to bring you news of any developments, but we haven't, because there wasn't any. A couple of weeks later, Enchantment arrived at Oevesi SGY-D0, that's Isham's Reach, and they bought a cactus called Phil to talk to, partly because Enchantment likes talking to cactuses, but mostly because you can't get a bobblehead in the shape of a volleyball. That's all. Total silence from that point. Speculation was rife that Enchantment had set off into the void and was still travelling in a straight line. But we feared the worst when the date that would have marked the furthest they could possibly have gone before all of their ships exploded, far, far from what we like to call civilization, with a puff of gas and a completely pointless eject, 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 emanating from their cockpit speaker and their body, hopefully encased in an escape pod, drifting for eternity, so distant that its signal would never reach a ship, no hope of rescue, until eventually the batteries were drawn down and the lifeless escape pod would contain a lifeless ex-commander. But we don't like to dwell on things, so we just assumed that there wouldn't be a story, and we moved on. All that changed, however, a few days ago when, well, let's just let the commander tell the tale. Day 127. Apparently, the cryopod's timer was set to weeks, not hours. Good to know. On a related note, I am now several months behind schedule. Fortunately, I removed my clones, fellow pilots' ability to act independently, so they've been patiently waiting for me. Time to get this train wreck rolling. Day 128. Barely 12 hours in and I've encountered a problem. While I was asleep, the ships drifted out of sensor range with each other. I can use a beacon to allow them to home in on one another, but the piece of junk antenna I put on this thing just doesn't work in supercruise. I had the ships rendezvous and squinted really hard at the nav ball to get them lined up as well as I could. Hopefully that'll fix the drift issue. Day 132. Good news, the drift issue is still there. Yeah, Phil, I know that's not good news. Just be quiet. Had to spend an extra hour in supercruise to meet up to refuel. It's getting late, so I'll do it tomorrow. Had an idea on how to fix the drift for next time though. Day 133. Fun fact, Kovas doesn't actually tell you when the fuel tank is full. How did I learn this? By wasting 60 to 70 fully loaded limpets, of course. It's my own fault, I really told Vivian Clone 1 to keep shooting limpets until my Kovas reported it was full. My Kovas didn't say anything, so she kept shooting. Stop laughing at me, Phil. I'm not watering you this week, I mean it. Some back-of-the-envelope maths shows I lost 15 light-years or so. I took out my frustration by ramming into the cluster of spent limpets. It was rather satisfying, although in hindsight, perhaps I should have rammed the one containing 60 to 70 tonnes of fuel. Once refueling was done, I had Vivienne, clone 1, transfer over to another ship and hit the self-destruct on Curly. At least, I'm pretty sure I told her to transfer over. Phil, I remember to transfer her, right? Oh. Well, we can't do anything about it now. I've had a very busy day ahead of me and flying in a straight line, doing absolutely nothing.
It appears that there's an ongoing situation brewing in the galaxy as the dastardly Don Antonacci appears. Despite being absent from the galaxy to have his sticky Komori fingers in a new pie this week. His latest business venture appears to be in software, the kind that's uploaded to ships, and in particular the kind responsible for tactical and weapons control aboard all common makes of Starship. Funnily enough, commanders of the Pilots Federation appear to be the only ones affected, with pirates, raiders, and scavengers completely unaffected by this new software. The symptoms? Well, it all started when one pilot went to deploy their hardpoints in a combat zone. And instead of laser doom from their turret-equipped Megadeth Cow Type 9 sewing nearby space with disco lights, the coffee machine turned on. After reconfiguring internal systems so the fire groups were actually wired to the weapons, the coffee machine resolutely refused to be deleted from the available options, and indeed appears to have connected itself to the toaster, the sonic shower, and the bio-waste flush mechanism, or at least the backwash setting. Which is quite an unpleasant surprise when you thought you were launching missiles. Furthermore, the dastardly Don appears to have been at the IFF systems, blanking out the signature of any hostile ship that you aren't shooting at right now. Commanders are being shot in the ASP, but from where? Nobody knows. They've had to deploy the Mark 1 eyeball method of spotting incoming fire, for fear of just shooting everyone and hoping that the target isn't one of the police. Sales of head tracking and VR headsets are said to be booming as a result, and turret gunners who aren't cross-eyed and are in high demand. Of course, you have to remember to give the command to fire. Across their nose, not up it. Funnily enough, the Don and his Komori cohorts appear to have shares in both head tracking systems and gunner recruitment agencies. The Rotters.
We all know that feeling. Find some random bacteria messing up the ground of a planet near you, and being the helpful and also tidy commander that you are, you whip out your Dysonator to give it a good suck and nothing. It doesn't move. Won't budge. Bit of fluff hanging from an outcrop. Give it a good going over with your handy handheld hoover and it stays resolutely in place. Doesn't even bend as if in a stiff breeze. Try it on a space mushroom that's a bit dusty. It sucks up the whole thing, stump and all, and makes that pain-straining noise as the motor starts to burn out. The kind of noise it makes when your cleaning robot attempts to earth the entire carpet, not just the crumbs you spilled on it. For the last week, explorers throughout the galaxy have been playing a rather harmless, if frustrating, game of Russian roulette with biological samples out there in space. A will-it, won't-it kind of game that, until you run around three different samples and cover the best part of a kilometre on foot, you won't know whether you just wasted all that boot leather on the planet's surface. Like a toddler faced with a new and exciting strain of healthy vegetable, the Dysonator had clamped its mouth shut, shaken its head and refused, despite commanders giving it an encouraging, "Here comes the choo-choo train, open the tunnel," and the offer of a good squirt of ketchup on each mouthful. Vista Genomics have admitted that something went wrong with their identifier chips. Computer says no appear to be stock answer for certain of the biologicals, but others, the Dysonator gobbled with glee and gargled down into its guts. They've released a long-range software patch this afternoon addressing the issue and have reassured commanders that the biological scanner is once again only going to work on unknown life. It won't attempt to eat the mold growing at the bottom of your coffee cup, won't get its knickers in a twist over the bottom of your curtains where the cat peed on them, and most definitely won't refuse to sample that icky green goo that you found on that planet.
Brewer Corporation just can't win. They created the megaspace palaces that are the fleet carriers. They make them in three exciting shapes and a variety of colours. They let you change the light bulb on the docking holograms to suit your mood. They even let you choose the interior and facilities. And what's more, they gave you total remote control from your cockpit. A simple touchscreen control for all the functions on your megaship. But no, that's not what the galaxy wanted. They wanted something grand, something out of a space opera with a huge bridge and an imposing captain's chair. They actually wanted to walk somewhere to drive this huge space barge and a giant screen through which to watch the world go wibbly when you witch space warp to the next system. So, behind the scenes and with an army of robot mechanics, and whilst your fleet carrier has been jumping from tritium hotspot to tritium hotspot, they've been shuffling the interior. They've pushed out walls, bashed enough bulkheads and flattened enough floors that it appears they're nearly ready to deliver just what the galaxy wanted. A chair. That you can sit in. In fact, not just one chair, but a whole viewing platform full of them, and a ready room, and funky consoles, and a souvenir shop. Using remote drone technology, a number of commanders have been exploring these newly carved spaces, looking at the control panels, the lumbar support, the air conditioning ducts in what promises to be yet another place you can walk around and emote to your heart's content. The first commander reaction to this epic achievement? Manage without taking your carrier back to dry dock for a refit? Well, that looks a bit boring. Where are all the people? I can't believe there are no people in there. Our reporter has admitted themselves to the infirmary after a head-to-desk incident followed by a galactic facepalm. Poor Brewer, they just can't win. However, in breaking news from earlier this evening, the Pilots Federation have confirmed that they'll also be shipping people to your ship-carrying ships, in ships, so they can walk about the ship looking at ships through the screen. That's not ship.
Incoming encrypted transmission. Decrypting. Decryption complete.
Text-only message detected. Engaging text-to-speech subsystem. Text of message follows. Hacks Wing, sorry for the lack of communications over the last few weeks. We have been dodging Thargoid attacks and the FTM Fellowship has sustained damage in the attacks. Low bandwidth communications have been restored and we anticipate full system restoration soon. We continue to hold strong against fierce Thargoid attacks. Continue to use Thargoid.watch to monitor system presence levels and combat priorities. There are still stations needing evacuation and repair. All of us need to pull together to roll back the Thargoid advances and defend innocent lives. Recently, we all saw the deployment of Salvation's new weapon in three systems in the Pleiades. Regardless of their intentions, Haxcom cannot condone the use of indiscriminate weapons of mass destruction. Haxwing's first mission is always to defend innocent lives and weapons that cannot be precisely targeted are antithetical to that mission. Not enough is known about Salvation, the weapon, or our enemy to presume that only proper, military targets are being destroyed by Fastfaster.
Message corruption detected. Processing cannot proceed.
Encrypted transmission complete.
It was not an uneventful week in Hutton Space, but having said that, it wasn't a bad week either. But it was a week for double negatives, apparently. Pirate attacks were beaten off in no fewer than four systems. Wolf 359, PSPF-LF2, Van Maanen Star, and LP245-10. I just want to know how the pirates managed to get a permit for VMS. I mean, it's not very anarchic getting a permit now, is it? Anyway, that's another story. Barnard Star is on 37%, which is sort of okay, bordering on good for Barnard Star. Any chance we could reach the dizzying heights of 40? After spending the last month doing the hokey-cokey in LP410-93, we are now in the shake-it-all-about phase of the operation as Hutton won the war to gain a foothold 4-0. Somewhat embarrassingly, we are in second place in the system, but I should clarify that is due more to the iron grip of Contrail, the controlling faction, rather than any skill or prowess on our part. Suffice it to say that we are staying, and this is solely for the reason that we don't want to inadvertently expand into it yet again. Truckers should rest assured that Operation Jump Into a Dump will resume normal services again from somewhere, sometime, soon. At the overachieving end of the Hutton Systems League, we have four systems above 60%, including two over 80. So again, please stop running missions and dumping data into systems that are above 60. We just end up with random expansions that interrupt our actual plans. Meanwhile in Colonia, Imperial High Admiral Air Marshal Generalissimo Hankey, Grand Kazi of all the Colonias, asked for assistance in the election in Tyr against the Colonia Cooperative, which is currently tied at 1-1. In Pytheas, Hotcoll have just emerged victorious in the war for second place, so any boost truckers can give them will cement that position and limit challenges from the minor factions. Oh, and a bit of help to Edge 38 would be nice too. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, boost Hutton influence in Barnard Star and reduce influence in LP532-81 and LP245-10, and what I just said about the Colonia stuff. If you want to shoot something, weren't all those pirates enough for you?
Now, I'm not saying that there are lots of community-led events going on, but we've put in a petition for an 8 or 9 day week just so we can fit them all in. If you're interested in any of these events, either to watch or to participate, then as usual, links for the information will be posted in Twitch chat and also in the description of the YouTube upload. I think we spoke too soon about the Comfy Cannon Cruise recovering from its fetish for bivalves, as this report from Commander Mephisto made clear.
The passengers of the Comfy Cannon Cruise could see different kinds of octahedral pods at waypoints 110 through 112, Viridi, Ceruleum and Blatium. A few jumps over 4,600 light years brought Khonsu to waypoint 113, where Ceruleum sinuous tubers can be found on a hell-like moon among silicate-based geysers and magma spouts. The six-month anniversary of the crew's departure on Tuesday went by without anyone noticing. Everyone on board seems to have become used to living on the road. Nearly 2,400 light-years away at waypoint 114, passengers could finally get back to their obsession with mollusks. Here, the first kind of real mollusk could be seen on the expedition. Viridi, to be specific. Today, Khonsu moved to waypoint 114, featuring luteolum real mollusks. There is another waypoint close by, then the crews will zigzag towards the bubble, probably arriving in Virati early next month.
The Wild Wild West expedition is nearly home, and their joy at being closer to home was tinged with some sadness, as Commander Airman Dan explains. Wild Wild West goes Guardian. The penultimate week for the Wild Wild West expedition has stopped over at a mini-bubble of Guardian sites to investigate ancient mysteries, do science, shoot sentries and reset all their fire groups. Crews on the three expedition carriers and several others that have joined the final push are in a fluid frenzy of artifact collection and data gathering, with commanders on all platforms excited to see hints of civilization once again. Last week, waypoint 15 was rededicated as Gizmo's Beacon in honour of Commander Senior 0025's furry feline friend, who sadly passed away early in December. Commander Airman Dan left a memorial beacon alight atop a mountain, connecting Gizmo's Beacon to Toby's Rest back at waypoint 8. Next week is the final stop on the Wild Wild West, bringing everyone together at a real universe destination, V1357 Cygni. This blue star and black hole pair are known to astronomers across the globe and the source of a great deal of learning about the cosmos. The expedition will remain at this final waypoint until the 27th of December, when ferry service back to Lave will begin. Commander Diluvian has managed to recover from the hardware problems he experienced last week, and the expedition All the Clouds in the Sky has been making good headway that he's had time to stare into the abyss, but we're worried that the abyss is staring back, given the contents of his report.
Expedition Day 93. Good progress over the last couple of days. We checked off two of our objectives. IC-5217 last Friday, and then after a short stopover, we entered NGC-7538, the first non-planetary nebula. Easy when there's still plenty of fuel, but there is hope to replenish the tritium in one of the civilized systems in the Heart and Soul Nebulae. After visiting those, the plan is to loop back and move in the general direction of the Elephant's Trunk Nebula. We're still talking about a few waypoints and a couple of thousand light-years of travel, though. My mind is, however, already preoccupied with one crazy idea. High above the Elephant's Trunk, visible in the sky, you can find the Cat's Eye Nebula. Either by mistake or intentionally, this beautiful cloud does not contain a single system to jump to. If you look on the EDSM map, it's not even registered, which is quite understandable as no one can actually log it as a discovery. But is it really impossible to get there? Those who know me a bit better probably already know what I'm thinking about. It's hard to judge using the galaxy map what the actual distance between the nebula and the nearest system is. It seems close enough for me, well, at least close enough for my long-distance cruising cutter D-3303 Persera. Yes, I think. If anyone's crazy enough to try that, it's definitely me. I think we will get to BD+661066 system and see if it even makes sense to try. Of course, there is an issue with instancing, but I'm still willing to try and see if I can get there, or at least close enough to take some nice close-up pictures.
The Magellan Experience is having great fun on their journey, which will eventually reach Magellan Star, and Commander Richard Fluvenaz M managed to catch his breath to send us this news.
The SWS Lockhart will start operations next week on Friday, the 17th of December. For this, there will be a new mass launch scheduled at 6 p.m. CST or 000 UTC. This mass launch is intended for those who just finished their college semester, barely got in a holiday, or are joining us from expeditions like Wild Wild West. This launch will also mark the start of more frequent events and tutoring sessions regarding exploring and other surprises. In other news, we've completed the Around the World Light with Stellar Nebula project, in which we travelled in a pack of ships around a stunning view, and we had more than 20 commanders join us for the meet-up.
The latest 5-euro tour, the Southern Nebula Journey, is having altogether too much fun, despite the weekly attrition in numbers. Commander Hunter has written to tell us what they've been up to.
Hello everyone. Another update from the Southern Nebula Journey. We've decided to extend the trip by 2 weeks to give our pilots more time to get to their waypoints without too much pressure and to enjoy the sights this tour offers. 8 pilots have already completed the journey and we've lost 2 more commanders. 5 people have signed up for this journey even though we left weeks ago. We now plan to return on 1st January 3308. Fly safe everyone, 07.
The fantastically frigid trip to Trifid has, paradoxically enough, set a hot pace and has arrived at its destination. Commander Richard Fluvenaz M has told us that they'll remain there until January whilst they do some exploring of the area. The Nexus exploration, the exobiology-focused long-range expedition, has had 1 or 2 incidents this week, as Commander Omega Leb Megalith tells.
Update, one of our FC captains who pilots the Nexus Olympus is down for the count after having a major docking accident and is unable to navigate his ship for now. We're hoping for a speedy recovery and advised all passengers on the FC Olympus to consider moving to the FC Nimrod as it is the closest to them, less than 2,000 light years. There was another recent incident where the commander of the FC Nimrod had jumped an additional 1 Kylie and left behind 3 commanders in the deep due to an error in dating departure times due to various time zones. The Nimrod backtracked its steps and allowed time for pilots to dock and board. Now the FC has made it to its next waypoint and is expected to depart this Friday or Saturday in hopes of crossing the Elysian shore and heading into the Errant Marches. Lastly, FC Legacy of Dawn hosts weekly live Twitch shows as we show newer commanders the ropes to deep space exploring and encouraging everyone to watch and enjoy it as it can be entertaining. Please keep your thoughts, prayers and positive vibes for Commander Anthony Hibbs as he did have a recent accident in real life that could disrupt any gameplay. He came to Nexus with the intent on exploring and we hope he will continue with us. 07 Commanders.
The Boffins at Canon Research would like to remind everyone that their speed scanning challenge ends in just 2 weeks. LCU No Fool Like One has paused in polishing his Probinator to give us this update.
It's the final fortnight to enter the Canon Speed Scanning Challenge, which ends on New Year's Eve. The winner gets a rather special Canon coin, and the top 3 also get Canon Thargoid sample flasks. All you have to do is scan 9 different lifeforms on Tucanae Sector AF-A D71-4E faster than anyone else and sell the data. You'll need to record a video of the whole process, which can take as little as 20 minutes if you want to win a prize. You can make a longer, more artistic video, but the only prize you'll win there will be at a film festival. You really do have a good chance of winning something, so go to canon.science and put organic in the search, and you can find out all about the competition.
Do you think that your expanding waistline will be getting you down after Christmas? Then set off into the expanding galaxy and exercise your keyboard tapping, at least, with the expedition New Year, New Discoveries 3308, which departs January the 2nd, and Commanders Arborish and Luna Sidhara are keen to have people along, as they explain.
Come and join us on a spectacular expedition to the core and back. A fully loaded carrier will ferry you to every waypoint on time. Meet up with friends, join us for events, and just have a good time.
Another way to fight the post-holiday blues, the celebration of Early Astronomy 4 expedition will set off on January 8, 3308. An expedition where you already know the names of many of the destinations, but you've never seen them up close and personal like this, and Commander Kesika is keen to get recruits, as she explains. Celebration of Early Astronomy 4 is almost 3 weeks away, the expedition sending budding explorers off to a real-world celestial objects within the in-game galaxy is getting closer. Find out more or sign up at theexpedition.info. And lastly, Holiday CQC Saturday starts at 21 UTC this Saturday, December the 18th. Do you find CQC boring because there's never anyone around? Would you like to have fun legitimately shooting people and not gain notoriety? Here's your chance. Turn up, shout, "Voldemort!" in the lobby and have some fun guilt-free. Although Commander Venetia is a hotboxer, pilots of all persuasions are welcome, and feel free to just create ad hoc teams. That's what they're there for. Commander Venetia says,
come out and show Santa your naughty side in some CQC. This is a great way for noob combat pilots to get practice without rebuys. If you have never joined us for these shenanigans, you are missing out. There will be laughs, explosions, crashes, and plenty of jokes to go around. The fabled stick song may even make an appearance. Who knows?
That should keep you all busy for a while. Email itookpart@huttonorbital.com if you know of any we've missed.